This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Many of us take health care for granted, especially if we're insured. When you don't have insurance or aren't eligible to apply for universal health care, what do you do? We'll hear from doctors today who have been troubled by the inability to treat treatable conditions for undocumented immigrants unless it becomes an emergency. But first, we're going to hear from someone directly affected and what that journey has been like. With us now is Afni Herrera. Afni, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much.
So I want to start with your story. I know it can be difficult to share personal health stories. And before we talk about yours, what made you want to share this with us?
Okay. And this time is, for me, a Zoom program, very, very special because I'm more freedom. I know to go into the hospital. I do my dialysis every single day at home, and this is successful for me.
And so what happened for you to get the dialysis to begin with? Did you start by having to go to the emergency room all the time?
Yes. Every single day I wake up from around 4:30 or 4 a.m. I go into the hospital in the emergency room, and I waiting from, I think, 2 hours every single day, and my dialysis start to around 7:30 maybe, and we finish 12:30 or 1, just depending from the other patients too. So you need every single day waiting 4 hours or 5, depending from the for the routine in the hospital.
That's a lot of time, and I'm sure it has an impact on going to work if you have to be waiting there for hours.
Oh, yeah, because, for example, just depending from the case, but some patients, he need to go into the hospital 3 times a week or 2 times. For example, and for me, I go in 2 times a week. I go in Wednesday and Saturdays, so I lose 2 days per week and work. So
yeah, that's gotta be very hard to have to go back and forth and do all of that.
Exactly. It's hard for me and for my economy too.
When you go for dialysis now, how is it different? What do you get to do now?
Okay. For now, for example, the big difference is I go into my job 5 days or 6 days a week. I work in 8 hours or 10 hours, just depending on my job. And I'm happy because I'm more freedom. This is especially, I'm more freedom.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're able to do this from home.
Exactly. For example, my therapy in my home is in the night. For example, I hook up sometimes 7:30 because my job is changing all the time. For example, I driving from hour and a half, 2 hours. So sometimes I wake up 4 a.m. or 5. And then, but this is not difficult for me. Just I'm happy for going every single day to my job.
Do you think more people know about this program, or is it still, are you talking to other people who need to know more about it?
For example, in my clinic, I help you, I think, 6 or 7 people. I explain to the, how to use the machine, for hookups, from, for cleaning, what else? So many things I to explain, but I only help you in this time, Latinos.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So do you find that people are excited about this, or are some people scared?
Sometimes it's half and half, because some people is a little scared because, I don't know, maybe he needs to a nurse or something because he know what is the
so they need somebody, they're looking for someone to help them. It's probably hard for them to do it by themselves, right?
Exactly. So, but more people now are changing the life, because for the PD, and I'm sorry, for hemo, it's moving now for PD. This is the good news.
How did Dr. Doshi help you?
Oh, okay. My Dr. Doshi, he's speaking so many times from PD. And he said, hey, you need to try this program because it's more better for you. And the first 2 months, I think, so all the time I say, no, I'll be fine with hemo. Doctor, no, I'm okay with hemo. No, all the time he is push me. No, you need to try. It's more better for you. When I try to start the first time in using the PD, I'm saying, wow, it's so big difference. I like it because I don't know, it's different all the time. It's different.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Afni Herrera is a dialysis patient who's been able to use the at-home treatment option instead of going to the ER. And with us now is Dr. Sumit Doshi, professor of clinical medicine in the Division of Nephrology at Indiana University and medical director for home dialysis with DaVita Dialysis. Dr. Doshi worked with Afni. Dr. Doshi, before we get into details about moral distress with our other guests, I wanted to see if you could explain to us and for our listeners who may not know the medical procedures Afni was talking about, what is PD versus hemo?
So there's two, when patients suffer from kidney failure, there's really two ways of treating the patients. And so essentially, one of them being what we call hemodialysis, which is where, you know, patients get dialysis through a dialysis machine where the blood comes out of the body, it gets cleaned through the machine, goes back in. The process typically, like you described, takes about 4 hours or so, and then there's usually, a recovery period, and patients, have a downtime, so to say, where they have to recover from this treatment. A second kind of treatment that patients can choose to do at home is called peritoneal dialysis, whereby we utilize the belly or abdomen and the lining around the gut to be able to clean out these toxins that accumulate because of the kidney failure, and also help out with removing some extra fluid from the body that also accumulates because most of these patients don't make enough urine.
And is PD the wave of the future, or is that just an option that's out there? Which one would you say is taking off?
So I would like to say that very much so is PD is an option that should be available to everyone. All of these needs are very individualized, which means that a lot of patients should have the availability of both of these options and be able to make an informed choice as to what works for them the most. There are, of course, certain criteria that we have to screen for before we offer the treatment, but these are fairly minimal, and I would say a majority of the patients would qualify for these treatments. But, certainly PD is something that's being pushed for, that's something that patients have a better quality of life. There's a lot of good data on that. And I think it is, in a way, a route to the future. Absolutely.
And when you say quality of your life, it sounds like Afni was happy to have the alternative, and it not only helped his health outlook, but also saved him time he would have had to take away from work.
Absolutely, yes. And I think for a lot of patients, for a lot of younger patients, patients who work, this is an excellent option. Now his case is very different in a sense that for him, it was pretty much the only good option, if you think about it, because most of the patients who are in his situation still have to come there, wait their turn, have to actually meet those criteria for emergent dialysis in order to even get their dialysis session. There is no guarantee that they'll get dialysis just by showing up to the emergency room. And so I think that's one of the big, ethical issues that we've had, is to be able to offer dialysis. And also, like you said, he would wait 3-4 hours certain times. Again, there are several times when, if he was not in a critical or emergent situation, that he would be asked to leave if there are other patients who were in a much worse situation.
Oh, wow. So it's not guaranteed if someone goes to the ER.
No, we are still on an emergent or urgent only based dialysis, which means that, you know, a lot of these patients like him would show up, and if there's multiple patients who showed up at the same time, then you are, you know, have this very hard task of figuring out, well, who should get dialysis and who should go back home and come back tomorrow or day after or whenever they feel worse. And so I think that is the big reason why someone like him, it's a very clear choice that they really need to be able to get some normalcy into their life, and this does not become the center point where they show up to the ER every day expecting that they would get dialysis.
Well, how serious is getting regular dialysis as opposed to coming into the ER? I mean, maybe we know the answer to that, but I'm just going to ask it anyway.
So the minimum necessary dialysis for patients that has been established is 3 times a week dialysis for 4 hours each time. And there are certain criteria that are set to make sure that each patient gets enough dialysis. In terms of coming to the ER, like I said, you know, most times you're not guaranteed you're going to get dialysis that day. Some patients, if they end up at the wrong times, they may only get once a week dialysis during that time. And when I say the minimum necessary, it basically means that if you get anything under that, you have a higher risk of, all adverse outcomes, heart conditions get worse, higher risk of death. Essentially, dialysis is what keeps you alive. It's a vital organ. So anytime that you under-dialyze, you're risking all of that.
Well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about healthcare for undocumented immigrants and how not being able to treat treatable conditions can cause moral distress in healthcare workers. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. You can also go to our app. It's called All in Vox Pop. Get it wherever you get your apps, and you can leave us a voice memo through that as well. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Emergency services are often used by those who don't have access to health insurance. And when it comes to undocumented immigrants, often the only care they receive is through emergency services and not preventative care, particularly when it comes to kidney disease. This has caused a moral dilemma for those in the healthcare field. And before the break, we heard from a patient who's been benefiting from one of the solutions to keep him out of the ER. But before we talk more about possible solutions, it's important to understand where this stems from. With us again is Dr. Sumit Doshi, Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine in the Division of Nephrology at Indiana University and Medical Director for Home Dialysis with DaVita Dialysis. We also have with us the authors behind the study on moral distress, Dr. Ariba Jawed, nephrologist and assistant professor at the University of Michigan School of Medicine, and Dr. Alexia Torkey, Regan Streif Institute research scientist and professor at IU School of Medicine. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll start with Dr. Jawed. You launched the first iteration of this study. How did it come about?
So this came about. I was at IU for my internal medicine residency and nephrology fellowships, and I decided to pursue a fellowship in clinical ethics. And I think even before I went into that fellowship, an ethical dilemma that I had been struggling with myself was how we were taking care of undocumented immigrants who needed dialysis. For part of my training, these patients used to get charity dialysis, coming in twice a week, coming in through the ER, getting their dialysis and leaving. And as I started my nephrology training, we saw a transition in how we were treating these patients. And then at that point, they had to come in through the ER for emergent dialysis, like Dr. Doshi just described. In fact, Dr. Doshi and I did nephrology training together. So we saw that, you know, I saw that transition. It was really hard for us to watch. It was really hard for us to communicate to these patients that things are going to be different now. We saw their health deteriorate. Nobody knew the right way of doing emergent dialysis. There is no evidence behind any of this to sort of even guide you as to how should you be dialyzing these patients for better outcomes. And I think that in itself caused a lot of personal moral distress for me. And I spoke to my mentors, I met Dr. Torkey, And this was a project for my clinical ethics fellowship through the Fairbanks Center of Ethics.
Well, Dr. Turkey, what was it that got you involved? What was the conversation that sparked your role?
Absolutely. Well, I think that we're trained as clinicians, all clinicians, but including physicians, to really take the best possible care of the patients in front of us. And so a moral dilemma can occur when something gets in the way of that. In fact, we define moral distress as knowing the right thing to do and being unable to do it. And so I had certainly experienced this in my own medical practice and just really felt for Dr. Javed and the other physicians now taking care of these patients with end-stage renal disease who would come in and the doctors knew what was needed to do, what was needed to be done, but there was no coverage for it unless the patient was in an emergency situation. And so to tell a patient, I'm sorry, but you have to leave and come back when you're worse, puts a great deal of distress, of course, on the patient, which is, you know, the most important thing here, but it provides tremendous distress for the physicians as well.
Has this always been sort of the way things have been designed in the medical field, Dr. Turkey?
Well, I mean, the issue is one of insurance coverage, which is that back in the 70s, they decided to have universal coverage by Medicare for U.S. citizens for dialysis. And this, of course, leaves out an important part of our community, which is people who have come to the United States who are not U.S. citizens or are undocumented and therefore don't have access to either Medicare or the Affordable Care Act. And then their access to dialysis through Medicaid is kind of a patchwork across different states. And in Indiana, for example, these patients who are undocumented can only receive support through emergency Medicaid when they actually come into the emergency room and they're sick, as opposed to routine 3 times a week dialysis.
I mean, I guess from the outside, it's like it seems that the obvious thing would be preventative care. Is there any understanding of why that is? Is it just because it's the law, Dr. Javed?
Yeah, and it depends on how each state has interpreted their law. So there's about 12 states, including New York, California, Arizona, who have interpreted their state Medicaid laws in the way that it would cover outpatient 3 times a week dialysis for undocumented members of their community.
Dr. Doshi, have you felt these pressures that Dr. Turkey and Dr. Javed have talked about with ethical dilemmas and just dealing with the stresses of this?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Like Dr. Javed mentioned, like, you know, we trained together. And so I think we've sort of lived through this where, you know, and you know, for me, I've been here for 7 years now. And so I think every time that you have to send off a patient knowing that they're going to have to come back in a much worse situation in emergency. And, you know, you are kind of the person who's you know, responsible for saying, hey, you know, we really can't offer you this life-saving treatment because, you don't have insurance. And, you know, that just kind of makes it extremely hard for you. And like you can imagine, it's just something that you would really not want to talk to the patient about, saying that, hey, you know, we're not going to be able to offer you this treatment, knowing that, you know, you will need it, you know, at some point, and this is going to be something that is required, and we just wait till things get much worse and have you come back.
Yeah, that's got to be really difficult to see people and know that they need the help, but you can't see them until they're much worse. Dr. Turkey, what has that been like for you? How have you been able to cope with that?
Yeah, I mean, over my practice, working certainly in two states, in both Indiana and Georgia, I found it very upsetting. And, you know, and I've seen kind of a patchwork of solutions over time. Sometimes, for example, as Dr. Javed mentioned, you can get kind of charity care. Sometimes private foundations will pick up some of the costs. But it is important to realize, you know, from the perspective of hospitals, that they simply would go bankrupt if they dialyzed many people without getting any reimbursement, especially in areas where there are a substantial number of undocumented immigrants who have end-stage renal disease. And so On the one hand, I understand why these choices are being made. But on the other hand, given our training, which is to treat the patient in front of us the very best we can, you know, it's very upsetting. So I've found it to be quite distressing in my own clinical practice. And I'm not even a nephrologist. And so I'm sure, you know, in talking with Dr. Javed and about this during her project, recognizing the particular toll that this takes on nephrologists.
Well, Dr. Javed, why was the focus of the study on nephrology? I mean, you are a nephrologist, so that might be one obvious reason. But are there any other treatable diseases that could have been the focus?
Well, I went on to do palliative care training, and I think I've thought about a lot how undocumented immigrants are also not eligible for hospice, and a lot of So I think I struggle with the fact that you can't give them standard of care for something like this, and then you can't even give them good end of life care. So I think in the experience that I've had, those are the two big things that I've identified. But to go back to our study, like although this was a nephrology question, our audience was pretty much anyone in the healthcare system who was interacting with them, which included emergency medicine physicians, ICU physicians, and also nurses on the floors, nurses in the ER. So I think I do want to highlight that although nephrologists are at the forefront of this, this is a problem, or, you know, this is an ethical dilemma that a lot of people in the healthcare system experience experience moral distress and resultant burnout from this.
So would it be fair to say that this is more about treatment for undocumented immigrants and how they aren't receiving the same system of care that everybody else is?
Yes, I think that's because I think we went on to ask that question that, you know, why does this cause you moral distress in our study? And the most of the people felt that it was because of just suffering of patients due to inadequate dialysis. And that was the factor that was quoted most in terms of contributing to their moral distress.
Dr. Doshi, how do you handle the moral distress?
It is absolutely difficult. I mean, we've not found a very, I'd say, a single way to sort of cope with it or deal with it. But I think what makes me feel better is that we have at least been able to work through some of this. We have been able to help a few patients that were in this situation, like you heard from Mr. Offney. We've been able to, at least provide some alternative options, which kind of, again, it's not everything. It doesn't help every single patient in this situation, but it keeps us motivated to kind of work through this. We have excellent colleagues who help with this as well. So I think we try to share what the resources we have and try to make the best of this situation.
Well, if you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Dr. Sumit Doshi, Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine in the Division of Nephrology at Indiana University, Dr. Ariba Javed, Nephrologist and Assistant Professor at University of Michigan School of Medicine, and Dr. Alexia Torkey, Regenstrieff Institute Research Scientist and Professor at IU School of Medicine. And we're talking about moral distress in the medical field, particularly when it comes to dialysis and some other conditions. Dr. Doshi, for those who may just be joining us, can you give us an understanding on why getting dialysis is important and how it impacts the undocumented community?
So most of the patients who have kidney failure have an inability to clear out the toxins that you generate day after day. And also, they do not make enough urine, which means that, you know, fluid builds up in their body over time. And I think it's critically important that these things be managed, which is why dialysis is necessary for these individuals so that they don't suffer the effects of both of these problems. And traditionally, we offer two kinds of dialysis, which is hemodialysis or blood dialysis, which is done over 4 hours, where the blood is cleaned, extra fluid is removed through a machine. Or we do peritoneal dialysis, where the patient's belly is utilized to clear out these toxins and remove extra fluid. Both of these processes are available to to the general population, the one thing that has been a roadblock for our undocumented community is the fact that insurance plays a big role in getting these treatments, and they have to then be limited to emergency treatments, which will only be done once they reach a critical stage where these toxins and the fluid levels are to a point where it can threaten their life, and that's when they get these treatments. I think that's how it differs from someone who has a kidney failure and has insurance.
Have you been able to, Dr. Javed, in your study at all, look at adverse outcomes that have happened to people who haven't been able to get the care they need?
We did not address that particular question, but there has, there have been studies out of Colorado, Houston, and San Francisco answering that particular question. And the numbers they came up with, the five-year relative hazard of mortality was 14-fold higher than those receiving regular scheduled dialysis. So we do know that it has a higher mortality, a higher morbidity. And there's also been studies looking at cost differences. And this one study from Houston, which is very old, 2007, proved that emergent dialysis was 3.7 times the cost of scheduled dialysis.
Wow, that's interesting, from 2007, and it's still not resolved.
True.
But I guess that's the way things work sometimes. It takes a long time. It takes bringing attention to the issues. And Dr. Torkey, do you think bringing attention to this will open the door for medical professionals and other specialties to raise their concerns?
I do. And I mean, I think that the program that Dr. Doshi is involved in is one of the innovative solutions. So, for example, even though we cannot fully pay for the three times a week hemodialysis that we'd like to, some hospitals have actually figured out ways to get patients enrolled in peritoneal dialysis, which they can mostly do at home. And so it's both a cost savings, but then as we heard earlier from a patient, it actually improves their quality of life to be able to do the peritoneal dialysis. And so I do think the struggles that we've gone through have led to some really innovative solutions. And then, other states have decided to extend their emergency Medicaid coverage to cover the three times a week dialysis. So that's another way to go. And then even more basically, providing better health care to undocumented immigrants early can prevent some cases of end-stage renal disease. So, for example, helping people to control their diabetes, control their blood pressure. If we can provide really good control of these risk factors for end-stage renal disease, I think that's another part of the solution.
And what about, what would your thoughts be on folks who think doctors are so used to seeing so many things, nothing affects them? How can this possibly bother you?
I do think that there certainly are people with that attitude. But I mean, having now, been in practice for 25 or 30 years and done medical ethics for a good part of that time, I know that physicians and many other clinicians care deeply about their patients. And it is incredibly upsetting to know the right thing to do. I mean, to know what a patient needs and to not be able to meet that need. And it's upsetting when it's because maybe of a lack of technology, but it's especially upsetting when it's something that we have, but because of insurance issues, there are restrictions. And as Dr. Javed has alluded to, moral distress has been shown to be associated with burnout and with a desire to leave the field. And so I really think it's a serious matter. And one more thing I think I should say with respect to that is that doctors, our feelings are important, but that's not the main point. I think the main point is that doctors having moral distress is a sign that we're not treating our patients right. And so I think we should look at it as an indication that when doctors are really distressed about what we're doing every day, that the patients are probably suffering. And to bring it all back to providing the best possible patient care, I think is really what this study is about and what all these efforts are about to provide high quality care to all patients.
Well, we're going to be back after a quick break. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on moral distress among clinicians and what the solutions are to not only the distress, but to the issue of getting the right health care to those in need. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're discussing the moral distress clinicians face in the medical field when faced with undocumented patients that aren't eligible for health coverage beyond emergency services. We just heard from doctors on the front lines and behind a study looking at the impact of not being able to treat treatable conditions and how that impact can affect those in the medical field. Now we're going to hear from them on possible solutions and what can be done to alleviate some of the distress. We're joined again by Dr. Ariba Javed, nephrologist and assistant professor at University of Michigan School of Medicine, Dr. Alexia Torkey, Regan Streef Institute research scientist and professor at IU School of Medicine, and Dr. Sumit Doshi, assistant professor of clinical medicine in the Division of Nephrology at Indiana University and medical director for home dialysis with DaVita Dialysis. Dr. Javed, was it hard to come up with enough people willing to talk about their moral distress for this study?
No, I think we had a pretty good response rate. We had about 40% people willing to fill out the survey and even put in, you know, the second part of the survey, which has not been published as part of this study, included free texted answers. So people really were willing to talk about it more than I thought.
Dr. Doshi, were you expecting other doctors to feel the same way that you do about this?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think a lot of doctors, you know, be it the emergency room doctors or the ICU doctors, or the admitting hospitalist team doctors, I think a lot of them share the same concerns and they share the same, you know, ethical dilemmas that we've had. They are pretty much burdened by this as much as we are. So there's still several conversations and, you know, about, you know, how to best handle this, how we should as a team try to approach this and, you know, absolutely. And even the nurses, our dialysis nurses, the nurses in the ER who are caring for these patients, every single person has the same sort of concerns and, you know, ethical dilemma when it comes to treating.
And I think we've heard a lot about burnout and distress in terms of COVID. So I think the general population is more aware of these issues. But I have to say, and until I heard about this study, I had never thought about this. So I really appreciate all of you talking about this today. Dr. Torkey, some people might think that why can't someone just pay up front for a procedure if they don't have insurance? I mean, assuming they have the thousands of dollars it probably costs. But is that a solution?
You know, unfortunately, the cost of dialysis is just way, way more than most people can afford. You know, it runs in the range of maybe $30,000 to $40,000 a year.
Wow,
and
that's a lot.
It's just not the kind of thing that most working people could possibly afford. So unfortunately, the idea of having people pay out of pocket is something only a few very wealthy people would be able to do.
Do doctors ever go rogue and treat patients anyway?
You know, I'm sure that happens. And I think, you know, I mean, I think, you know, again, the issue is that we have to be you know, good ethical with our use of finances as well. So, you know, perhaps that happens. But, you know, in general, we can't have a policy of treating people in ways that are, you know, a violation of our agreements with, you know, organizations like Medicare and Medicaid. It's just not possible in the big picture. So, you know, I mean, of course, you know, does that sometimes happen? It probably does, but it certainly isn't a systemic solution.
Right. And Dr. Javed, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I want to say there was this one other study out of Colorado who spoke to providers, and working the system was a theme that did emerge. So, you know, kind of what you're hinting at, just kind of doing what you think is best for the patient. And like Dr. Torkey said, it is not the solution, but it is a mechanism that some providers might go to.
Well, Dr. Javed, did any medical professionals express ideas for solutions when you were doing this study, or was this more just about seeing how they felt with the work they were doing?
I think as part of the study, we did ask, you know, we towards the end, we asked for any opinions or comments or things of that sort that they might have. And we did have a lot of, we did have some physicians voice concerns about, a lot of that just goes to reinterpretation of the laws and, you know, working with your healthcare systems and working with your governments to formulate laws that do not put physicians in the bind that they are sometimes put in.
And Dr. Doshi, in your experience, is this something that you think is a big problem here in Indiana versus other states?
I don't think that this is specific to Indiana. I think this is pretty much present I think I'd like to quote what Dr. Torkey said, like there's been like a sort of a patchwork of solutions for this problem, and it's almost like every state deals with it slightly differently. But it's not a problem that's, you know, focused in Indiana. I think we see this across the country, and you know, it's present everywhere. There's just different ways that people have devised or found to deal with this problem. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of solutions, Dr. Doshi, you've been part of a program aimed at alleviating some of the issues faced by undocumented patients who need regular dialysis. What is the program and how does it work?
So one of the things that we've done is, you know, working with the hospital, the administration, the, you know, large dialysis organization, is to kind of give a pathway for some of the patients to be able to do this at home, be able to do dialysis at home where they are trained, where they get the resources to be able to do the peritoneal dialysis or PD treatments while they're at home, so that they don't have to get to the emergency room for these emergent treatments. And that kind of is as close to a regular dialysis schedule that they can get to. We've actually launched last year, in fact, another program, which is Urgent Start Peritoneal Dialysis Program, which is kind of a first of its kind in the state, and very, very few places across the nation actually offer this program, where the aim of this program is to help patients who have not had any prior care and who need dialysis suddenly. Now, the concept is most of these patients end up needing dialysis, everything's new to them, and they end up getting a catheter, essentially, which goes into the blood vessels. And, you know, this has a very high risk of infection, which multiple studies have shown. And so our aim was to also kind of help some of these patients. And this is not restricted to the undocumented patients, but also benefits them. But the idea is to kind of take away that initial, start on hemodialysis, whereby you are kind of stuck with this system of coming in for emergent treatment, and sort of go towards, starting off straight away with peritoneal dialysis or with the abdominal or belly dialysis that we keep mentioning. And so this offers the patient from the get-go to kind of choose a path that evades the year-long process of, you know, getting a catheter, getting onto hemodialysis, and then trying to figure out where we go from there.
If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with doctors about moral distress and also about solutions in dealing with healthcare treatment for undocumented immigrants and making sure they get the care that they need. Dr. Javid, are there any plans for future studies into moral distress?
No, not so far.
And would you say that the studies that you've done so far on this distress have been distressing?
I think they were. I mean, it was a distressing issue, but I think it was it sort of alleviated some of the distress to hear from my other colleagues and to hear that this is something that all of us are in together. So, you know, the sense of camaraderie, which is a way to deal with, you know, venting and sort of talking to your colleagues is a way to deal with moral distress and sort of prevent the effects of moral distress. So I think it was quite encouraging in some ways to read about what people were saying and their willingness to talk about these things.
And was this study done prior to COVID?
Yes, this was done. This was done prior to COVID.
So I guess I'm just curious. I'm really intrigued by this topic now. If things have gotten better or worse after the study and learning about what's going on, particularly just because of the strain COVID's had on hospitals.
Yeah, I think like Dr. Doshi just described, things definitely have gotten better in the area we're at for our patients with the programs that he's working on. But I do want to point out that COVID itself was, you know, when people were trying to avoid to go to the ER, nobody wanted to go to the ER, especially last year. But our undocumented immigrants who would only qualify for emergent dialysis had no choice but to go to the ER for dialysis. So it was putting them at, you know, this entire new layer of risk with already substandard care that they were getting. One other thing that I think also comes to my mind when I think of kidney disease and undocumented immigrants is the fact that they're not eligible for transplant either, despite being younger patients. So they don't qualify for transplant, but we do, but they are allowed to donate their organs.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that is another ethical dilemma when we talk about taking care of undocumented immigrants with kidney disease.
Right. I mean, it makes you think that there's some kind of layer of, I don't even know what to call it, but something that's not ethically right in the system where people are treated like second class.
Yes, and you know, it's not like we said, some states are better than others, some areas are doing a better job than others, and they qualify for more healthcare services. Mm-hmm. So it's a process, I guess, that we're all working towards.
Well, Dr. Turkey, how much of a problem are we facing in healthcare for undocumented immigrants due to policies brought about through the Trump administration, or has it always been this way?
You know, I want to correct one thing, is that dialysis actually costs more like $75,000 to $90,000 a year.
Oh,
I think
man.
I quoted a lower number, but anyway, all very high. But I think the question of administration, you know, I mean, I think that attitudes certainly about undocumented immigrants and certain types of policies created more fear. And I think that fear can lead people to avoid seeking health care when they need it, if they're more afraid, for example, of deportation or other restrictions. And so I think that climate of fear was certainly a change that occurred during our past administration. I will say, however, that this is a problem that predates the Trump administration and remains beyond it. And the Affordable Care Act, which was an absolutely wonderful thing for many U.S. citizens, actually did not include provisions, at least with respect to this type of care for people who are undocumented. And so many undocumented persons do have to see either for example, county or city health systems will see anybody who lives within their boundaries, no questions asked. But certain programs and entitlements do require the documentation of citizenship completely exclude people who are undocumented. And that includes, for example, the Affordable Care Act.
Right, right. And is there any other option out there for folks who are undocumented to get regular preventative health care, aside from maybe clinics that may be offering free health care or different states having different policies?
You know, I mean, there are many community clinics, and certainly in our community, there are clinics who see people, again, no questions asked, and do provide very high quality care. And so, you know, I want to give, a credit to the many people who work seeing patients, no matter who they are, and taking excellent care of them. I would say that there isn't enough of that to go around. And then when these certain complicated medical conditions like end-stage renal disease develop, the options become much, much less available. And so I think that there are challenges all around, but there are particular challenges in something like dialysis, which again is an intervention that takes, you know, regular three times a week intervention. And it's just a particularly difficult problem.
Well, we have about a few minutes left here, and I'd like to go around and get the opinion from each of you on what is the ultimate solution. Dr. Javid, I'll start with you.
I want to say that, you know, in my mind, when I started off with this study, what I was thinking was that somebody needs to hear how doctors are feeling. And so I think the first step for me was writing about it, talking, publishing about it, and making your voice heard. And then and a lot of that has been done, you know, other than our study, a lot of that in the last 3 or 4 years, a lot of this has been published from various other states. So to me, that was the first part of the solution. And then obviously, I think it requires, and then working with the data that you get and working with other stakeholders, like Dr. Doshi has already done. And, you know, I think those would all be steps towards forming solutions.
Dr. Doshi, what about you?
So I'd like to say, like, you know, we all like a perfect solution to most problems. But, you know, I think most would agree that in medicine, typically that is a hard stop. You know, we usually don't find a perfect solution at most times. But I think as long as we can find ways in which we can help, help these patients, lead as normal a life as possible. And, you know, that helps us reduce moral distress among our colleagues and, help wake up with the feeling that, you know, we're doing something that is not completely against what, you know, what we stand for. I think that's, if we can get to that point, I think that would be a perfectly reasonable solution. It's just finding ways in which we can help these patients and go from there.
And Dr. Turkey?
You know, I agree with everything that's been said, and we'll also add a broader perspective that we, you know, clearly have many people in our community who we regard as undocumented, but who contribute to our community. They pay taxes, certainly through sales tax. They work in our community, and clearly we have many jobs and other things that we are glad to have people do. And as a consequence of being part of our community, we owe everyone access to high-quality health care. And so I think broader policies need to be changed to allow people to work in our communities to get documentation and to access important resources like healthcare. So kind of a broader perspective, I agree with all the things that are done more narrowly to specifically address this issue. But I think more broadly, we need to acknowledge that people who are undocumented are part of our community, and we need to take care of them within our healthcare system and our society.
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds like, you know, there's things that doctors can do, but the overall big issue is one that needs to be tackled for everything to fall into place. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us this afternoon. It's been a pleasure. Dr. Ariba Javed, nephrologist and assistant professor at University of Michigan School of Medicine, Dr. Alexia Torkey, Regenstrief Institute research scientist and professor at IU School of Medicine, and Dr. Sumit Doshi, assistant professor of clinical medicine in the Division of Nephrology at Indiana University and medical director for home dialysis with DaVita Dialysis. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like to get a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.